You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Do you use TikTok? It's okay if you don't, but for those who do, hang tight while I get everyone on the same page. This social media platform's gained a lot of attention in the last few years, and now small businesses have taken notice. Rachel Carton is a social media consultant.
TikTok is leveling the playing field of who gets to be an entrepreneur and what types of resources you need to compete.
And this includes local LA-based brands, such as the hair product line Rizos Curls. Its CEO, Julissa Prado, uses her personal and company TikTok accounts to connect with customers.
Three unique stocking stuffer gift ideas you're going to love.
I love.
And it's becoming an important marketing tool during the holiday gift season. According to the consulting firm Deloitte, 60% of Gen Z and more than half of all millennials will do at least some of their holiday shopping on social media. Even Gen Xers and boomers are warming up to the trend. So what does this mean for LA's entrepreneurs? KCRW's Megan Jamerson takes it from here.
When Julissa Prado launched Rizos Curls in LA in 2017, she started self-funded. So she relied heavily on social media because it was free.
I think social media really allowed small businesses like mine when I was starting off to be able to compete with like the big beauty conglomerates. It was like whoever was most creative was able to shine instead of like whoever had the largest marketing dollars.
At first, most of her customers came from Facebook. Then it was Instagram. Now it's TikTok. She changed her strategy around this time last year when she had an aha moment, realizing that if she wanted to reach younger customers, TikTok was where it was at. She was with her 18-year-old sister.
It was like her and her friends and like my little cousins that were all together. And they're like, I don't know what kind of hairstyle to do. And instead of like going to like Pinterest or I don't know, like literally Google, they didn't even open any of these search engines. They went directly to TikTok. And I'm like, wait. Like, let me see your phone.
So her brand leaned into having fun on the app. A year later, 2/3 of their customers are coming directly from TikTok to shop products on their website.
That's not even the platform where we have the highest amount of followers on, but it's really driving a lot of customers and turning, you know, making them actually shop. Because I think there's a difference between having engagement and getting a lot of views on something. And then there's like a whole other thing actually getting those people to purchase.
This has to do with the fact that authenticity is highly valued by TikTok users. And so small companies that rely on their personality and post lo-fi videos are doing really well on the platform, says Rachel Carton. She's an independent social media consultant with over a decade of experience.
Now you're seeing those big brands sort of like scramble and be like, it's not really working when we post that, you know, 2-minute taken on some nice camera, like, beautiful storytelling, but it's not native to the TikTok platform. And it's those small businesses that have just had to rely on themselves because of maybe less resources or whatever it may be. And I think they're the ones that are actually sort of setting that trend.
The way small brands are able to speak directly to customers and just be themselves is something Amy Liu recognized when she started her clean makeup brand in Santa Monica.
It's honestly really similar to what it's always been. Like I was saying, when I was younger and I used to read magazines and we used to do those quizzes that were like, oh, what kind of a donut are you? Are you a glazed donut? Are you a whatever? And now it's the same thing. I think that's really the beauty of it, is if you can find a way to relate to the customer and they can see themselves in it and then they understand, they're like, oh, this one's for me, or this brand is for me because they speak to me in a way that I can understand.
Liu relies on a team of digital natives to promote her brand, Tower 28, on TikTok. Erin DeVilbiss is a social media coordinator at the company.
If I want, you know, a purple blush, I can look purple blush up in TikTok, and then you can see all the different options for what's out there and what you can buy.
Which makes it super convenient for Christmas shopping, says Danny Boyce. She's also on the social team.
I have my Christmas gifts, like, as a saved category, and just all day when I'm scrolling and I see something, I'm like, that is perfect for my mom.
I'm with Boyce and DeVilbiss at the Tower 28 offices in Santa Monica, and they're about to record a video for work.
This is an audio that's really popular right now. It's Mariah Carey's season. It's her time to shine.
She wants to use this trending sound to announce the restock of their popular mascara. She sets up a mini tripod, puts an iPhone in it, and grabs some mascara tubes. Then Boyce and DeVilbiss record themselves holding the mascara up to the camera while lip-syncing to Mariah.
And then you add the caption onto your TikTok.
Because TikTok is changing the way brands communicate with customers, it's also changing what it means for a brand in LA to take off. Trenton Williams founded his company at his kitchen counter, where we are standing now.
This is our first product. It's the original holster pouch that clips to your belt or your pants. It wraps around your thigh. It's essentially a modern day fanny pack.
He is the founder and CEO of Pochi Goods, which offers bags in different colors and belts for sporty customers. And everything from the design process to social media happens here in his Limerick Park home. When he started, he got the help of a friend who was a director to give him some pointers on shooting phone video and editing his first TikTok post. It only got maybe 200 views, which was a bummer after spending at least a couple days to create it, but
I didn't give up. That was the main thing, because I think at that point, if anybody else were to like put that much time and effort in a video and it didn't work, maybe they would think in their head like, oh, this isn't working out. Let me just stop doing it. But I knew that it was only a matter of time. I just had to continue to go.
Williams also grew up with a dad that started his own restaurant, so Williams knew it took persistence. He kept posting, and then a few months later, it happened. His first TikTok video from months before went viral.
And it's great because I sold out of the first two drops of my bags. The green one sold out within like a month, and then the black one just sold out too.
He sold 500 of the green holster bag, 600 of the black version. And bad news for all those procrastinators, Black Friday went so well, he's completely out of bags. It's all because of TikTok.
I like to compare it to, you know, this is my time to drive around the city selling my product in the back of a truck. I think back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, that's what you would do. Like, that's why I kind of gear my social media more towards me telling the story than anything. Me talking about the product, me speaking to people directly, because this is my product in the back of the truck moment. This is me selling mixtapes in the back of my hoopty to one day blow up, so.
And while TikTok will stay the strategy for now, one day, Williams says you might see him around town with his bags, selling them out of his trunk just for old time's sake. For KCRW, I'm Megan Jamerson.
Still to come on GLA, they met on the set decades ago. Now, LA power couple Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks continue to work with one another, which is also music to their ears. That's yours on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson have made movies together in front of the camera, like when they starred together in the movie Volunteers way back in 1985. And they work behind the scenes, producing and writing together as well, like in the indie smash My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Ian is a vegetarian. He doesn't eat meat.
What do you mean he don't eat no meat?
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I make lamb.
She'll make lamb. This year, they teamed up to make A Man Called Otto, based on a Swedish book and movie, which comes out in a few weeks. It stars Hanks as an aging curmudgeon who lost a wife and doesn't know how to go on. Here he is talking to her headstone.
Found some of the flowers you like. Pink. There was a deal on sale. 2 for $8. I'm sorry I didn't get him here earlier. Got distracted by some new neighbors. Nitwit husband. Didn't even own an Allen wrench from one of the chipmunks.
Rita Wilson is a producer on that movie, actually sings on its soundtrack, too. She's been making music for a while, and she joins us right now. Rita, welcome.
Hello, Steve. Yasu, if I may say so. For fellow, all the Greeks out there.
Fellow Greek. Aging curmudgeon is not Tom Hanks, though, right? You actively seek out these movies. Is that what you guys talk about all the time? That it's like, maybe this is something you should do. Or he says to you, maybe this is something that you should do.
Not really. It's more like a gut instinct about something. It's something that I'll see or read about or hear about, and I'll have truly a physical reaction to it. Partly what I'm attracted to, I think, are stories where it feels very specific. It feels like it could be my story, but it turns out to be a lot of other people's story too. Even in my Big Fat Greek Wedding, I thought definitely, this is my story. I'm a Greek girl and I married a non-Greek guy, and my parents, you know, would you know, never say this. But when my mom saw the Greek Wedding the first time, and she was like, I said, Mom, what'd you think of the movie? And she was laughing. Oh, this movie is very funny. These people are crazy. They're not like us. She wanted no identification.
She didn't buy it. Yeah. But in fact, they are like us. And like a lot of ethnic families, by the way, right?
Right. And that's what was so appealing about A Man Called Uwe / A Man Called Otto, is that we're more similar than we are different. And that really got to me. And I still believe that. Okay, maybe that's naive, but that's what I believe.
Well, I mean, and you got to have hope, right?
Yes. Yeah. And this was part of the other thing. It was so life-affirming. This story, you know, when Mark Forster, our director, amazing director, was talking about needing a song for the movie, and he said, I think you should write a song. And I was like, what? Wait a minute. And the songwriter in me was elated. I was jumping up and down inside my head. And the producer in me was, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? What if he hates the song? It could be a disaster. But what it reminded me of, and it takes me back to my parents, is that when my parents died, first my dad and then my mom, it was a thing that Mike Nichols, the director, said to me, which was, the conversation continues. You know, you're grieving, you're missing that person. And the idea that they'd still be alive somehow in these conversations that you'd have with them was a concept I couldn't quite grasp until after my 5 years or so had gone by. And then I realized I am talking to my parents all the time, and I hear their voices, and I hear the voices of my friends that have passed. And that was sort of the jumping off point for the song, to say, okay, well, what is that conversation that Otto would be having? Or what would he be hearing that would speak to him?
Let's hear a little bit of that song. The song is called Till You're Home.
'Cause I will tell you the whole truth, that there's no color in the world without you. And I finally see how your love is the best of me. Yeah, there's so much I want you to know.
You know, this movie is about community, right? And, getting out and living in a shared existence with your neighbors, people who just moved into the neighborhood, people you might have lost touch with. And here in L.A., we are often isolated here because we
have our cars,
right? We have to drive so much and, you know, to get from one place to another. And that sense of isolation was only amplified during COVID. What does community look like for you?
To me, you know, growing up in Hollywood, because I was a first-generation American and my mom was Greek, my dad was Bulgarian, and my dad had escaped from Bulgaria to come to America, I was keenly aware of the people that had done kindnesses to my parents along the way, particularly my dad. And I was aware of a greater community outside of the family that were people that wanted the best for you and wanted and held your best interests in their heart. At the same time, which I think is part of the reason I responded to the Mexican family that moves next door, is that even though my parents were uneducated, they were incredibly smart people, incredibly intuitive people, and people of extraordinary character. And sometimes that wasn't particularly seen in the world. I could tell that people treated my parents differently because they had accents or they didn't get their grammar right or something. And I remember thinking, you don't know, these people are amazing. He escaped from Bulgaria. She escaped from her village in, from Albania into Greece. Like, these people have done more in their lives than you'll ever do. And growing up like that, I gained an empathy for other people. So community for me doesn't look just like one thing. It looks like certain people of a certain kind of character.
I want to thank you. A Man Called Otto is in theaters December 30th, is that right, here in L.A.?
Correct. It's locally in L.A., December 30th in New York and L.A., and then it goes wide on January 13th, Martin Luther King weekend.
All right. Actress, producer, singer, Rita Wilson. Thanks for coming on and talking with us, Rita.
E faristo, Steve.
Paracalo. Ευχαριστώ means thank you, by the way, in Greek. Παρακαλώ, you're welcome. Well, we thank you for your support of public radio. More of Greater LA coming up in a moment, but I do want to remind you about the last day. This is it of KCRW's year-end pledge drive. We call it the Season of Giving Back. And if you're like me, you probably have a stack of letters from wonderful organizations asking for your year-end support. I have just it's probably at 5 inches high on my kitchen counter. I hope you're able to give to all the ones you really care about. I hope that also includes KCRW. What's your reason to give back? Is it news that informs you? Is it music that soothes you? Events that keep you connected to your friends and neighbors all across Greater LA? Whatever your reason, we ask that you donate right now at kcrw.com/give. We're emphasizing right now our food bank partnerships, doubling the meals you donate when you give, and you forgo your thank you gift. kcrw.com/give, and thank you for your continued support. Moving on with Greater LA from KCRW, and buckle up because we're about to blast off from La La Land to the universe of funk.
Well, all right. Star Child, citizens of the universe, recording angels. We have returned to claim the pyramid.
Oh, yeah. Those sci-fi grooves were brought to you by the one and only George Clinton, leader of the band Parliament Funkadelic, known for creating Afro-futurist worlds populated with pharaohs and UFOs. Clinton transports minds to the edges of the galaxy with his psychedelic funk, but he's also, believe it or not, an established visual artist. And he's got an exhibition at Jeffrey Deitch Gallery titled The Rhythm of Vision. Our art insider, Lindsay Preston Zappas, is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, always good to have you on. Hi.
Hey, Steve.
We know George Clinton and the P-Funks, of course, the musicians, but this is George Clinton, the visual artist. When did he start making visual art?
He's actually been making art most of his career from, you know, the 50s or 60s. And so he would be on tour and he'd be, you know, scribbling away in the back of his tour bus, or he'd fill his hotel rooms with paintings and canvases. So, you know, I think over the years he's really developed this visual language, which you see a lot of in his music and album art as well, these characters kind of coming to life. And in the last few years, he's really starting to display his work a bit more and kind of focus on his visual practice. And he talks about this moment where he realized that he could almost approach art with the same kind of like open-ended world building that he does in his music. And it really kind of unlocked his art for him. And he's really fallen into the practice.
This exhibit, Lindsay, coincides with the 40th anniversary of his song Atomic Dog. I mean, it's a classic for sure. How are the pieces on display in communication with that song?
So yeah, the Atomic Dog was actually one of George Clinton's alter egos in a way. So, you know, in the song you heard, obviously the lyrics bow wow wow, but also he says the dog is in me, the dog is me. And, you know, you may have seen his signature when he signs a signature for fans or on records. He signs with this little dog cartoon. And that dog cartoon is one of these characters that George Clinton has really developed over the years. And really, that's kind of the mainstay of this exhibition. So across the paintings in the show, you see this sort of dog cartoon repeated. In some of the paintings, you'll see it's just kind of a simple spray-painted outline. In others, the dog shape becomes filled with kind of collage elements. In some, it's almost as if that triangular dog head morphs into an alien head, like it's kind of a similar shape, or it becomes a UFO. So it kind of grounds the show in this symbology.
His music indeed expresses sci-fi, you know, psychedelic, Afro-futurist themes. As we heard in the opening number, Mothership Connection, how does George Clinton explore these themes in this exhibit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, his music is so theatrical. He says he was inspired by these sort of theatrical bands and theatrical albums like Kiss or like Sgt. Pepper's from the Beatles. And I think his paintings have the same kind of feeling. They feel improvisational and layered, and some of them become narrative as well. So there's one called We Are Here, which is a spray painted landscape with a spaceship in the sky. And there's text in the painting that says the time for change is here. So you're really seeing that kind of Afrofuturist narrative coming through very directly here. Some of them are not as direct, but they just kind of all like glide and sort of flow into this sort of Afrofuturist narrative.
And there's also a stage that's involved in this exhibition,
yes,
as well, right? Talk a little bit about this stage that another artist had something to do with, right? That created.
Yeah, exactly. So the stage is actually a huge part of the show. You walk in and you're sort of confronted by this giant stage by the artist Lauren Halsey. She's obsessed with George Clinton, and she's kind of a self-proclaimed funketeer, Afronaut, throwing down the science fiction. Like she talks about in some of her interviews, like, yes, I'm, you know, on the UFO. Like she's totally there. So it's this stage, it's sort of like this built up mound that's spray painted to look like the cosmos. There's a throne made out of shiny CDs. There's figures emerging from this cosmic mound, and there's these spaceships floating above, hands coming down from the clouds. And again, there's a lot of little references to, you know, the iconography of the band. So it really just brings the music to life in a similar way that Clinton's work does, and kind of his artwork integrates with the music.
Is there going to be a performance? This is an exhibit for sure, right? But is it a concert?
We missed it, Steve. We missed it. So the performance happened last month in November. George Clinton did a spoken word piece on the stage with a, sort of a backing band as well. But still, go see the show. Another fun note is that the building actually used to be a recording studio called Radio Recorders, and Clinton has recorded several of his songs in that space over the years. So it's kind of a cool nod to just be in that space and experience his work.
Well, George Clinton, The Rhythm of Vision, with a stage by Lauren Halsey, is now through January 14th over at Jeffrey Deitch Gallery on Santa Monica Boulevard. Lindsay Preston-Zappas, our art insider with Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, to the La Brea Tar Pits we go, a place about to get a big makeover. I'd never been, which is, yeah, a little embarrassing. What about you? Did you go on a field trip maybe as a kid? Have you been lately? What are your favorite memories? Tell us at kcrw.com/GLA. And while you're there, share your story, give us some ideas. Of course, subscribe to the podcast too, and get that podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Nihar Patel, Zeke Reed, Sonia Geis, Arnie Seipel, John Meek, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all helped put the episode together this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and attention. Have a great night.